Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kaf Aleph Amud Bet, three lines from the bottom. Yesterday we left off with the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, which is that one may not rent out their Beit HaMerchatz to an Ovei Kochavim, because Nikra Al Shimo, because it's under his name, and work is done in there, people are just going to assume that these people are working for him, not that there was a rental that was done. But when it comes to the field, when he rents it out to an Ovei Kochavim, that is totally fine, because of the principle, Arisa Arisute Ka'ovid, that the individual is basically working for himself. He's working for his own benefit because he gets a percentage of the profits of the property. We saw yesterday that was even extended by the Ram in the Balei HaTosafot, who suggested that it actually has to do with the fact that he's getting paid out of the production of the field itself. By the Beit HaMerchatz, you don't have either of those. Number one is, it's not usually given the Arisut. So that's not a normal way to engage someone at Beit HaMerchatz. There's no way to pay the person through whatever he is producing because he's going to get cash for whatever it is that he's doing. And normally people are Schireyom there. So that's the difference between Beit HaMerchatz and the Sadeh. We saw that the Rabbeinu Tam wanted to parlay that into Kablanut as well, to say that in a case where it's an aris, and the aris working the field not only benefits himself, but benefits the Jew, and we still say it's mutar, then certainly by the case of Kablanut, where the Jew gets no benefit, and the contractor accrues everything to himself and the benefit of what he does for his work, he should definitely be allowed to do this. We saw that the Ri disagreed with the Rabbeinu Tam, and said that there is a difference, that Kablanut is problematic, especially with Mechubar the Karka, and that it's different than the cases of Arisa Usutei Ka'ovid, because over there, people normally do it that way. Over here, when people work, there's a good chance that they're Schireyom. You can have people working on your house that are Schireyom. You can have them work that they are Kablanim. And therefore, it was problematic, according to the Ri. And we saw that the Rabbeinu Tam himself, even though he passed in that way, he refused, when he built his own house, to allow the Kablanim to work on Shabbat. He deferred to the other authorities in this matter. So now that was the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And as the Balei HaTosafot said yesterday, we actually paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that arisei arisutei ka'ovid. And that's a big principle that's necessary in order to allow these types of transactions to take place. Even though we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, when it comes to Kablanut, to say that Kablanut is asur, if it's mechubar inside of the tchum, or it's something that's talush, that's connected to be used to mechubar, even if the goy takes it home, it's problematic. Only if it's talush, the gamre, and it's in the goy's house, or it's chutz l'tchum, then you can deal with kablanut and shabbat, which is the way that we paskin. Now, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar omer, lo yaskir adam sadeu dekuti, mipnei shenikreit al shemo. So a person may not rent out his property, his land, to a kuti because it's called by the Jew's name. And a kuti ends up doing work on Chol Shel Moed, as opposed to what we saw with Shimon Gamliel yesterday. The Gemara said it was asur by a nachri, not asur by a kuti, because we assume by the kuti, even though he does work on Chol Shel Moed, that's not necessarily problematic. Even regular Israelim do work on Chol Shel Moed. There's Dover Aved, Tzarecha Moed. So there are reasons or dispensations that can be had, and just because he's running your thing or doing something in the field during Chol Moed doesn't mean that he's abrogating the dinim of Chol Moed. About what you would conclude from this is, Oved Kochavim, right? What's the dinim of Oved Kochavim according to this? Shari, that's fine. Damre Arisa Arisutei Ovid. Because then we just say that the Aris is working for himself. So with regards to Shabbat, which would be the problem with the Oved Kochavim, there we assume that he's doing it for his own benefit. Iochi Kuti Nami. Why don't we say the same thing with regards to the Kuti? Amre Arisa Arisutei Ovid. You can invoke the same principle. Where it says, Arisuta, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, lately. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar doesn't have that principle. Well, if he doesn't have that principle, then why is he making a distinction between Kuti and Ovei Kochavim? The principle was, Kuti is a problem because of Chol Shel Moed. Then we said, if that's the case, Ovei Kochavim is fine, because Arisa Arusutei Ka'ovid. Then he goes, okay, well then say the same thing about the Kuti. He doesn't hold that principle. If he doesn't hold that principle, the whole distinction we made before falls apart. Ella Ovei Kochavim, my time of Mutar. Now you have to tell me another reason why Ovei Kochavim is Mutar and not a Kuti. Tamrinan Le, Vitzayit. Because when you tell the Goy not to work, he listens. Kuti nami aminin levitzayit. So when I say the same thing about the kuti, you tell him when he can work or what he can do, and he'll listen. Kuti lo tzayit. Kuti doesn't listen. Da'amar ana gamirna tfei minach. He says, I know better than you. So here you have, Bishim Elazar does not subscribe to arisa, arisuteko of it. That's why the Baalei Tosfot said before we pass on like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel against this position of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now he has to give an explanation for his position as to why it's problematic with a kuti and not with an ovei kochavim. Had he said that both were problematic, there'd be nothing to discuss over here. Because then you would say they're both problematic because it's nikra shmo shel Yisrael. There's no principle of arisa arusuteko of it. And that's why you're restricted. The fact that he distinguishes between a kuti and ovei kochavim raises the problem as to why would you make such a distinction. The Gemara's answer is that when you speak to a non-Jew and you tell him you can't work on Shabbat, you can't work on Cholosh Moed, he says, okay, that's what you want, that's the terms, that's your religious beliefs, that's fine, I'll do whatever you ask of me. You say that to the Kuti says, what are you talking about? Now with regards to Shabbat, the Kuti's not a problem because the Kuti keeps Shabbat as well. Because the Kuti keeps anything that's written in the Torah. He doesn't keep things that are drashot Mina Torah, or Isurei Dirabanan. So over here, the Kuti, by regards to Cholosh Moed, doesn't believe there's any such an Isur. And then you come and tell him, listen, you can't work on Shabbat. He says, of course not, I don't work on Shabbat. Tell him, you can't work on Cholosh Moed. He says, what are you talking about? There's no such restriction. And it's a general principle that you have when you are working for Jews who think they know. They always give you a harder time when you're trying to take off for religious reasons. Or when you're dealing with even Kiruv, and speaking to people about the religious experience, people who know a little bit or are somewhat indoctrinated have a much harder time being engaged than do people who have no connection whatsoever. And similarly over here, the Kuti has enough information to make him dangerous, to make him say that, look, I know better than you, I know what the religious principles are, and there's no such thing as a restriction on Kol Shemoid, and he's not going to listen in this case. My area, Mipneshni Kreital Shemo. Then the reason being given by Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is problematic over here because he's saying the reason that it's problem is because it's called by your name. Typically, the real problem here should be Mishum Lifnei Ver Lotite Mikshom. Here you have a Kuti who's considered to be a Jew, and then he's going to end up working because of you on Cholosh Moed. That's a problem of Lifnei Ver Lotite Mikshom. So my answer is, Chada ba'od kamar. He gave both reasons. Chada mishum lifnei iver. You're right, there's a problem of lifnei iver. Beyond the problem of lifnei iver, ba'od mipnei shnikret al shemo. There's a second problem, which is, it's also called by the Jew's name. If he works on Chol HaMoed, people are going to have chashad with regards to the Jew. The question you would have to ask now is, why would it pick only the chashad reason to bring down when you're dealing with Nisa Doraita of lifnei iver, lifnei mikshol, which seems to be a much more serious violation. So the Ritva suggests over here, it's hard to know whether that was the case, but he's surmising that from the fact that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar wrote it in this way, which is that when it came to this Melechet Chol HaMoed, it was not as straightforward as the Gemara makes it, or as black and white as the Gemara makes it here. Some Kutim did keep Melechet Chol HaMoed, and therefore the issue of Lifnei Iver was much more shaky. The issue of that it's Nikreit Al Shemo, or the Chashad issue, would be more serious because there are a minority or even a large minority of Kutim that would work on Chol HaMoed. And that's why he suggests that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar focused on the Chashad aspect rather than Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol. Now the Baalei Tosafot over here say Ihochi. Ihochi means that after we've come to our conclusion, then the Gemara asks the problem Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol. The question the Baalei Tosafot poses, what does this have to do with our conclusion in explaining Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? If you go back to the core statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, why isn't there a problem of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol? Shimon Elazar says, don't give it to a kuti, because he might work on Chol HaMoed, and then it'll be Nikreit Al Shemo. Well, that's a problem with Lifnei Iver from the start. So what the Baalei Tosafot answer is, had it not been for our explanation of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, you could have said that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that a kuti is a sur, and so is a goy. They're both asurim. You wouldn't have made the deal that we made, you would have been fine. If you say they're both asurim, the reason he left out Lifnei Iver is because it doesn't apply by a goy. He wrote kuti for the chiddush, that a kuti is a problem even though he keeps Shabbat because of the problem of Chol HaMoed. Ihochi is once we say that we're going to make a bifurcation in the din between the kuti and the goy, which is that the kuti is asur under Rabbi Shimon Elazar and the goy is mutar, then you have to come to our explanation. That forces you now into a question of why didn't he write lifnei iver? Because he's only speaking about a kuti. And when you're only speaking about a kuti, lifnei iver is relevant. That's the first thing. The second thing that you have to deal with here is, how do you know that when you have a kuti there, you're in violation of lifnei iver lo titei mechshol? That is dependent on a machloket as to what the status of the kutiim are. There's a machloket tanaim, later on a machloket amuraim, and then a final stage in the Gemara, where kutiim are determined to be not Jewish or totally off the derech, they're worshipping avodah zarah. The question as to the origins of the kutiim, many assign that to the psukim in Melachim Bet with regards to the Shomronim at the time of the Galut of the Aseret HaShvatim, where they're displacing peoples and they bring people there. And then the Shomronim are in difficulty because the animals are attacking them. And there was definitely a belief in that time that you needed to worship the local god in order to protect yourself. And so they asked for a Kohen to come in and tell them what to do. And so they send a Kohen from the Galut over to the Shomronim to instruct them about what to do. And then they keep the practices of the Jews in order to save themselves from the Arayot, as it's known, the lions or the animals that are attacking them. The Machloket Tanaim as to whether the Shomronim are Derei Emet. They were real converts, and they did it, even though they were scared, they did it with a true heart, and they really are Jews. Or are the Shomronim or the Kutiim Derei Arayot, which is that they were lion converts, which is that they were scared. And because they were scared, they converted, but they didn't really convert as Gerei Tzedek. So here, the Gemara assumes that there's a problem lifnei iver, which means that you believe that the Gerim are Gerei Emet. Otherwise, there's no problem lifnei iver. With regards to a Goy, if he works on Shabbat, if a Goy works on Chol Shemoed, there's no problem lifnei iver. He has no restriction. Only a Kuti, who's a Jew, that works on those days would be problematic. So there are two ways to deal with that. The first way is just to simply say that the Gemara wanted to capture all positions, and therefore it dealt with whether they are Gerei Emet, whether they're Gerei Ayot, how do you deal with the problem with Nei Iver? Pali on Tosafot, on the other hand, point out that this is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar l'shitato. And that is because he believes that Kutim are Gerei Emet in the Gemara and Chulin. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar l'shitato, we're asking on him, why is there no leaf Nei Iver? If he thinks that the Kuti is problematic because he's going to work on Chol HaMoed, there should be a problem of lifnei iver, lo titen mechshol. And that works nicely because then it's all within the shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The Rabbeinu Tam then comes to a second conclusion here, which is a very important statement that he makes, even though many do not agree, almost most Rishonim don't agree with the Rabbeinu Tam. And that is, the Rabbeinu Tam says, you see from here that lifnei iver, lo titen mechshol applies to Dinei Derabanan. He says the Isser to work on Chol HaMoed is only an Isser Derabanan. And yet, the Gemara is invoking the principle of Lifnei Iver Lo Titei Mechshol. The conclusion you would come to is, Lifnei Iver is relevant even by Dinei Derabanan. So now you could argue on the Rabbeinu Tam in two positions. One is, maybe there's no Lifnei Iver by Dinei Derabanan. Or, more importantly, you can argue against his position that Chol HaMoed is an Isser Derabanan. That is that many Rishonim believe that the Isser of Melacha on Chol HaMoed is an Isser De'oraita. And based on that, you would not have any proof that Lifnei Iver applies to the Rabbanan, because here we're speaking about an Isser De'oraita. The reason the Kutim didn't keep it is because it is not explicit in the Torah. It's a limud that comes out of a remez. That was the Ritva's position before, which is, if Melacha on Chol HaMoed is a remez in the Torah, but it's still there. You can get the diuk, even if it didn't have the Rabbanan. And that's why some of the Kutim, or many of the Kutim, kept Melachet Cholo Shomoei. So that's the view of many Vishonim, that is Doraita, and the Rabbeinu Ilchanan, who questions the Rabbeinu Tam, brings a Gemara that's a serious problem for the Rabbeinu Tam, which is that the Gemara Moed Katan contrasts Avelut with Cholo Shomoei. Both of them have restrictions of work. And it says, Avelut is the Rabbanan, Cholo Moed is the Doraita. Makes it sound like Melachet Cholo Moed is a Din Doraita. In answering that, the Rabbeinu Tam gives a number of answers. One answer is that it's an asmachta, and therefore the Gemara calls it doraita versus a pure derabanan of avelut. Or he says that the asmachta of the din of Chol HaMoed comes from the Torah, whereas the asmachta for avelut comes from divrei Kabbalah. So that's why he calls it doraita versus derabanan. Or he suggests that there are two different types of dinei derabanan. This is an important distinction in general with Dine Drabanan. Is the Dine Drabanan an extension of a Dine Doraita? Or is the Dine Drabanan a completely new institution? And what he suggests is Melechet Chol HaMoed is Ikar Min HaTorah. It has a basis in the Torah because of Atu Yom Tov. The Melech of Yom Tov, so Chol HaMoed has an Isur Melecha that is akin, or in order to prevent the problems of Melecha on Yom Tov itself. Which means that that Isur Drabanan has an Ikar Min HaTorah, whereas Avelut has no basis in the Torah whatsoever, and therefore Avelut is a Din Drabanan completely. So they're both Din Drabanan. One has a source, the right, or is connected to a Din Drabanan. One is a completely independent Din Drabanan. That's how the Rabbeinu Tam deals with it. On the other hand, the Ramban, Kedarko Bakodesh, who has the perspective of all the Rishonim, comes up with his position, which he believes is the correct way to view this, which is that the Isur of Melacha on Chol HaMoed is the Oraita, but it was handed over to the Rabbanan to determine that which is Asur and that which is not Asur, meaning that the Isur exists min HaTorah, but there's no definition to the Isur. The definition of the Isur was handed over to the Rabbanan. And that's why you have these Gemarot that seem to be in conflict, where some say it's the Rabbanan, some say it's the Oraita. The one saying it's the Oraita are speaking about the core Isur, the Oraita of Isur Melacha. What this means, the Rabbanan, is that the Rabbanan were empowered to determine what is Asur on Chol HaMoed, what is Mutar on Chol HaMoed. In any of those cases, then, you would then not have the conclusion of Rabbeinu Tam that Bifnei Iver applies even to Dinei de Rabbanan. The Minchat Chinuch has a question with regards to this, whether Bifnei Iver applies by Dinei de Rabbanan or not, and goes back and forth with regards to this. I heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zatzal, from the name of his Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, that he thought the Minchat Chinuch's question was moot, because he says that encompassed in the restriction of the Bifnei Iver, Lo Titei Mikshol, is not only a restriction in causing someone else to do an Aveira, there's also just a simple, you can't give bad advice to someone else. That is the interpretation Rashi brings on Chumash, that you cannot give someone bad advice when they don't know that you're giving them bad advice. You're giving them advice because it benefits you. You're giving them advice because you want them to get ruined. Whatever it is that you're advising them, bad advice when the other person doesn't know or is relying on your advice, that's an issue d'oraita of Lifnei Iver Lo Titei Mikshol. He says that telling someone to do or causing someone to do an issue d'rabanan is no worse than giving them bad advice. And he says if you're a chayav for giving them bad advice, you're also chayav for causing them to violate a din d'rabanan. That's what he said, in course, that it should apply, not because what the Rabbeinu Tam says, but simply because it's an extension of bad advice. All right, now, Gemara says, Ani Marikai Zoregi Not Karkom. These are people who plant saffron in the fields. Dovi Kochavim Nokot B'Shabto B'Yisrael B'Chad B'Shabto. Dovi Kochavim worked on Shabbat, and the Jew worked on Sunday. Just from the way that the case is set up, you would probably surmise that this is speaking about early Christians, and therefore the Christian worked on Shabbat, and the Jew worked on Sunday. They each worked on each other's Shabbat in this case. Obviously, you could just say that they picked Sunday because it's the day after Shabbat, and they were using other days, but it's a possibility, depending on how the censor dealt with the word Ovi Kochavim over here, as to what the relationship was. Atu the Kamei de Rava, they came before Rava, Sharaluhu. He said it's totally mutar. Eitve Ravina the Rava. Ravina challenged Rava. Yisrael, Ovi Kochavim, Shekiblu Sadeh B'Shutafut. You have in Israel an Ovi Kochavim who accepted a field b'shutafut. Simple way to read this is that they are partners in the field, partnership in ownership of the field. But if you look in Rashi, and this is the way that the majority of the Rishonim explain it, is that they are accepting an arisut together over a field. They are both going to work in the field together as arisim. Lo yamar Yisrael Ovi Kochavim tuchel kochav b'shabbat b'ani b'chol. You can't say to the goy, you take the Shabbat profits, and I'll take a day on the weekday connected the Shabbat that you worked. V'im hitnu mitchila. If that was the condition of their partnership up front, then it is mutar. V'im bal d'cheshbon asur. They come to make a cheshbon, it is problematic. So there are actually three statements here within this braita, and we have to deal with each one of them. The first one is that if the Jew says to the Ovi Kochavim, take your portion from Shabbat, and I'll take my portion from Chol, there we do not allow it, because we assume that the Goy, in one sense, is working on behalf of the Jew on Shabbat. Each one of the parties is supposed to work 50% of each day. When he says to the goy, you work on Shabbat, and I'll take a Yom Chol, basically what he is doing is exchanging the goy's work on Shabbat on his behalf for his work on another day on behalf of the goy. Which means now that he has a goy that is his shaliach on Shabbat, working on his behalf for Shabbat, and that's problematic, because that it means that you're getting skar Shabbat. You're getting the benefit of earnings that came out on Shabbat, and that is a problem. You have a problem of Amir Liakum, but besides Amir Liakum, the Amir Liakum, the goy works, and he is your shliach. In the end, you end up having skar Shabbat, even beyond the problem of Amir Liakum. That's the problem in the first case. When they started out, it was just a 50-50 partnership without any details expressed. Now later on, when they come in to divide it up, the Jew says to the guy, you work Shabbat, I'll work Chol, and you'll take the Shabbat, you'll take Chol. The problem is, they entered the partnership in a way that was a 50-50 partnership. They didn't enter it with that being stated up front. If it was stated up front, then you wouldn't have a problem. That's the next line in the Braita. The next line in the Braita says, imitchila. If in the origins of their agreement, that was their partnership agreement. You work Shabbat and keep the Shabbat profits. I'll work Sundays and we'll keep the Sunday profits. If you do that up front, there's not a problem. Because then the goy is no longer working on behalf of the Jew. Their partnership is now divided 50-50 in the following manner. Instead of being each day is 50-50 split, they have different days that are their 50-50 split. And that was stipulated up front. That's the case. There's no problem of the work on Shabbat because he never agreed to work on Shabbat. He never agreed to be that part of his partnership in the 50%. He only agreed to work on Sundays. And therefore, the Shabbat and Sunday now become the 50-50 split instead of being 50-50 on each given day. And that's what makes it mutar. Then the last line of the Braita is imbaula cheshbon. There are two ways you could read this. The Raivud reads it in the following manner, which is, even if you agree that the goy will work on Shabbat and the Jew will work on Sunday, in Bal B'Cheshbon, at the end of the day, if you come now and try to work out the profits and divide it 50-50, you basically undermine or erase the division that you made. For instance, if you're in a retail situation, retail stores make a disproportionate amount of their profits on Saturdays. So if you give the goy Shabbat and you work on Sunday, he's going to make double on Shabbat what you make on the Sunday, maybe even triple what you would make on the Sunday. So afterwards, you come by and say, listen, you got three times as much as I got. So now, let's split it up 50-50. What the Raivud says is you've erased what you did originally. You're showing that there really is no division between Shabbat and Sunday. That's the way the Raivud reads it. Rashi reads it differently, and the majority of the Rishonim, again, follow the Shita of Rashi over here, which is in Bal B'Cheshbon, is a totally different or new statement in the Braita, which is, in a case where they did not agree up front, but rather, if they just accepted it stam, they didn't make any stipulations between them. And then, the Ovid Kuchavim ends up working on Shabbat, and the Jew works on Chol. Meaning, without any instructions, without any agreements between them, this is what happens. He works Shabbat, you work Sunday, and then afterwards you're coming to divide up the profits. So there again, it's asur, because you're taking Schar Shabbat. By the fact that you're willing to split it 50-50 shows you that the goy is working for you on Shabbat and you are now dividing up the profits afterwards. So your statement afterwards indicates or is migaleh dat that you really want the Schar Shabbat. And even though you didn't stipulate it, never said anything, you never instructed him, never guided him to do that, nevertheless, by the division of the profits, you're indicating that that's the case. Now you could make the condition up front that you work Shabbat and I work 3 days b'chol. And that would make it then even because of the differentiation in the profits. You have to be careful that you don't make that as we're 50-50 partners and then you do that. Just means that this is the division of the partnership front because that's the way that we want to be our 50-50 partners. That might work because then you're not trading the profits of Shabbat for something else. You're stipulating in front that I don't work on Shabbat. In order for this to be a good partnership, I need to get 3 days during the week to make that even. That way might be okay because up front you never took on any of the profits of Shabbat. That means that if the profits of Shabbat differentiate from those 3 days, you're not going to go back and re-divide the profits, so that should be fine. The Iksif. Rava was embarrassed because he just gave a psak that these Ovid Kochavim and Israel were splitting the profits. Seemingly, they did not make that stipulation up front. And that would mean it was asur, yet Rava paskin that it was mutar. So figlei milta. In the end, it turned out, dehitnu mikarabu. It was a case where they actually had made the conditions up front, and Rava came to the right psak for the wrong reason. There are two other places that you can see that in the Rebbe Giv Eiger, the Gemara in Gittin and the Gemara in Bava Metzia, where a similar thing happens to Rava. Rava gives the wrong psak. He's embarrassed because he's told or he's given information that showed that the psak was incorrect. And siyata d'shmaya, it turns out that the details of the case were actually made it that Rava's psak was right, even though it was the wrong reason. So this is an idea or concept when people are morei horaha and people who are giving psak alocha, that if they do it in the right way and they're yirei Hashem, that Hashem gives them a certain amount of siyata d'shmaya, that even here where he came to the right psak for the wrong reason, that Hashem is protecting those people that are giving a psak alocha. Famous story by Moshe Feinstein with regards to the psak of an aguna post-World War II, that a woman had gotten remarried after their husband had been declared, or supposedly declared, that he had passed away. And then afterwards, the husband showed up, which obviously was a huge problem. And she came to Rav Moshe and said, you know, I've got an psak that the woman was not an aguna and that she was free. And Rav Moshe, the story goes, just kept asking her, did you come to me for a psak? Did you come to me for a psak? And he said it over and over and over again. And finally, the woman broke down and said no. And Rav Moshe believed that the psak alocha, that the woman was not an aguna and that she was free, would not result in a problem like this. He believed in that siyata d'shmaya, that a posek who gave that type of psak and looked into the matter, that Hashem would give them the siyata d'shmaya to come to the right conclusion, and that it couldn't be possible that this woman's husband showed up after someone like Moshe Feinstein gave him psak like that. And therefore, he pushed and pushed and pushed the woman to make sure, because he was certain that he would never have given such a psak. But you see that concept of siyata d'shmaya in Piskei Halacha. So now Gemara says, Rav Gvia Mibei Katil Amar, Rav Gvia Mibei Katil brings this case, Hanu Shtilei Orla. These people who plant saplings of Orla. We saw this in the Gemara's in Baba Batra, Gemara's in Baba Metzia, where people would take on the responsibility of planting a kerem, planting a field, and they would get the starter, and then they would be entitled to a certain amount of years of the production of the field for their planting of the sapling, whether it was a percentage, or whether it was a certain number of years. So, hava ovei kochavim achil shnei dorla, b'Yisrael shnei da'atera. So they worked it out, these two individuals who were in a partnership. They stipulated that the goy would get it for the first 3 years, and the Jew would get it for the subsequent 3 years. Because, obviously, during the shnei orla, the first 3 years, the peirot are surim b'hana'ah. Since they're surim b'hana'ah, the Jew doesn't want them. So he let the goy take the first 3 years. And then he took the subsequent 3 years. Atu lekamei d'Rava. They brought the case before Rava to see if this was permissible. Sharu lehu. He was mad for them to do this. Va otvei Ravina d'Rava. Wait a minute. Didn't we have before the case here that Ravina asked Rava a question? So Rav Gvia Mibei Katil says that the case was not these marukai. The question was about shtile orla. So now the Gemara says, well, if Rav Gvia believes that this was the question asked, isn't the next part of the story that Ravina now challenges Rava? And where is that? He says, no, the suye sae. You got it wrong there. Ravina didn't come to undermine Rava. Rather, Ravina came to support Rava. And that is, if the condition was placed up front, then it works. And that's the case over here too, that the condition was placed up front, and then it's fine. So Rashi wants to go so far as to say that it is even true in a case where they did not stipulate it up front, but rather even after the fact that they made this agreement, va'yifsif. Didn't Rava get embarrassed from whatever Ravina had said to him? Lo ayu dvarim me'olam. Never happened. That part of the story did not happen. So Gvia Mebe Katil has a different story. His story is that they were splitting up the Orla saplings. The Goy took the first 3 years. The Jew took the subsequent 3 years. Rava was matir because they made that condition up front. So Rashi would say that it is even true in a case where they did not stipulate it up front, but rather even after the fact. Ravina brings the statements that are supportive of Rava's position over there. The question as to why it works. Rashi brings down two reasons behind this. One is because ein kan shlichut. There is no shlichut. Da'isol nami sharei le'ovda. The Jew himself is also able to work the field. Regards to Orla, there's no restriction against working the field, putting the saplings in, watering them, taking care of them during the first 3 years of Orla. The only restriction is with regards to the peirot. So the Jew could work the field during those 3 years, and so can the Goy. So the Goy is not doing his shlichut, because the Jew himself could have done it himself. He doesn't need the Goy to do it on his behalf, and therefore we don't deem it to be that he's working on his behalf because he's trying to circumvent an Isur. That's number one. Number two is, what about the achilat peirot? The fact that the Perot Ha'ilan are the profits that the individual works the field gets, there it seems to me that he's trading with the Goy. He's basically making the Goy his shaliach and eating from the Yisrei Hanah in order that the Jew gets him in the years where there is no Yisrei Hanah. So Rashi says, Nimsa Ne'enem Perot Olah, Shmachran. It's as if he's selling his portion in the Perot Olah in exchange for the other guy's portion in the Perot. Ein Zeh Ne'enem, Shekena Mishpat, Shana Sheze Oveid Hu Ochel. Says that the principle or the working guideline was whoever worked the field during that year was entitled to the produce during that year. And so therefore it wasn't that the Israel really owned 50% of the payroll and he was selling off his portion. Rather, it was the case that whoever worked the field gets the payroll. The Jew could have worked the field during that period. There's no restrictions. When the Goy works it, he's not having the Goy do something that's asur. But because the Goy worked that year, he's entitled to 100% of the fruits during those years. And therefore the Jew's not really trading the fruits back and forth. So Rashi uses those two reasons to explain why this case would be mutar. As Rashi says over here, the heter gamur hava, the avagav, the kiblua yachad, even though they got it together, the chatchila, the v'amar lo Yisrael, haya toveid gimel shanim alav, v'ani gimel achreihem. So Rashi wants to go as far as to say that it is even true in a case where they did not stipulate it up front, but rather even after the fact that they made this agreement because there's no trading. And there's no problem where the goy is doing work for you that you can't do. Given that, it's totally mutar, even if they didn't agree to it up front. Could have argued that it was only true up front. Rashi argues that it's mutar, even if there was no such stipulation up front. And then Ravina would be supportive of that, which is that's only in a case where the Jew is asking the Goy to do work for him on Shabbat. Over here, he's not asking to do work that he can't do, and the payroll belonged to him because he's working during the year. That's the principle, that the payroll belongs to the person who works during that year. Right, now the Gemara asks, Ibailu, Stama Mai. If you make no stipulations, what is the din? So now before we had a case of Stama, which was the case of Ubaula Cheshbon, case where they came to divide the profits afterwards. That's at least according to the way that Rashi and the other Rishonim read it. The Ravid had a different way to read it, so the question here for the Ravid is slightly different, but let's focus on Rashi. Rashi said before, if you make no agreement between you, and then in the end you come to divide up the profits, that's problematic, because then you're trading the prophets of Shabbat against the prophets of Chol. On the other hand, Stama, what happens if there are no stipulations made? That means not up front about the division of work and not in the back end about the division of the prophets. So the guy doesn't say up front, you work on Shabbat, I'll work on Chol. But that's what happens. The guy just happens to work on Shabbat and he works on Chol. In the back end, what happens if they don't say anything, which is they don't divide up. You say you take the prophets of Shabbat, I'll take the prophets of Chol. He's not trading the whole day off against the Shabbat. They simply divide the profits. What's the din? Tashma, let's try to come to a conclusion. Im hitnu mitchila mutar. The Braita says that if they made that condition up front, it works. Ha stama asur. Sounds like if he didn't stipulate anything, it would be asur. The other end, im aseifa. What are you going to do with the latter part? Im bola cheshbon asur. If they come to a cheshbon, then it's asur. Ha stama. Seems from that, if they didn't do anything like that, mutar. Then it would be mutar. Elamaha, leka mashamina. Gemara leaves this problem unresolved because it can't prove anything from the Braita because he never mentioned Shabbat up front, never mentioned in the back end. Braita doesn't give you guidance with regards to that. How you paskin, the Rabbeinu Hananel over here says, lo yishtito, the problem was never solved. V'abdina beidu chumra, the isur doraita. The isur doraita, and therefore, we will say that we go the chumra. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Hananel. Other Rishonim actually go in the other direction and say that we're dealing with an Isur Derabanan over here. At most, it could be Amir Lakum or Schar Shabbat, both of which might be only restrictions Derabanan. If that's the case, when you have a Suffolk Bidini Derabanan, we go the Kula. And the Ran claims that the Rambam passing the Chumra over here, not because of the reasoning of the Rabbeinu Hananel that it's an Isur Doraita, rather because of the machloket between Ravina and Ravia Mebe Katil. Two incidents or the two stories are different. And the question of the Gemara here of Stama and Stama is only according to Ravia Mebe Katil. According to Ravina, that's part of the Braita, and we already concluded there that Stama Vistama is restricted. And that's why Rabban was Ichsif in the case by Ravina, because that was a case of Stama Vistama. And that's why he paskins the Chumrah, because this was already resolved by the case of Ravina. Whereas by the case of Rav Gvir Ben Katel, it wasn't part of the story of Rava, and that's why the Gemara is asking the question in Rav Gvir Ben Katel. On the other hand, Rashi and others clearly differentiate between the case Stama and Stama over here, versus the case of Stama in the Braita that Ravina brought, whereby, according to Rashi, in all those cases over there, either they have a stipulation up front, or after they have the business, he says to them, you take Shabbat, I'll take the weekday. Or, in Bola Cheshbon, at the end, they go to divide it up along the lines of Shabbat and Nechol. And thus, all those cases are not dealing with a Stam-Stam, which Rashi says is the case over here, where there's no statement both in the beginning and no statement in the end. And that's why these cases are completely different, and it's a question even within the Shita of Ravina. So that'd be a machloket in terms of Psak. With that, we finish the first parak. Hadron Alach, Lifnei Edem. Right now we begin the second parak with the Mishnah that we already quoted in the first parak, which was, Eima midim beima bepundakot shel obdei kochavim, neshu chashudim al rivia. One may not leave their animal alone with an obed kochavim when he's in the inn and he stays in the bed and breakfast or the inn overnight. He may not give the goy the animal to watch. Velo tijiachet isha imahem. A woman cannot be alone with the obdei kochavim, neshu chashudim al arayot, because they're suspect of engaging in arayot. Velo yitiachet adam imahem. And a man may not be alone with them, because they are problematic when it comes to the issues of murder. So here you have three different problems of chashad. You have a chashad of bestiality, chashad of arayot, and chashad of shvichut damim. All of those are problems with the individuals we're speaking about, with these obdei kochavim. There must have been good precedent for the fact that this was true. And therefore, the Chachamim over here say that you can't be mityached with any of these individuals, because in the case of the Rivia, you have a problem of lifnei iver, lo titei michshol. The Goy is commanded about bestiality. We'll see that, as Rashi brings over here, that B'nai Noach nesru ba, because it says, v'yud basar achad, that Adam and Chava will be like one unit. Yetsu beima chayavof. So there you have a problem of an isor of B'nai Noach, problem of lifnei iver, lo titei michshol. Problem of arayot is obvious, that the woman shouldn't be alone with them because of the restrictions that will be violated. It's not a problem of lifnei iver, it's a problem of arayot for the woman herself. And obviously, shvichut damim. Aside from lifnei iver aspects of this, the person would be killed, and so it's a serious precaution that you want to take, so you can't be alone with them. May I ask, Verimini, is that really true? Lochim em ve'imadu purban, ve'in choshishim, lo mishum roveya, ve'lo mishum nirva, ve'lo mishum mukse, ve'lo mishum ne'evad. You're allowed to purchase a behemah for a korban from an obed kochavim. And when you buy it from him, you don't have to suspect, number one, that there was bestiality that was done with this animal. That's whether roveya or nirba in both directions. You don't have to worry about it being mukseh, which Rashi says over here. Shehiktsu v'yichidu ala tikrovet avodat kochavim. In essence, they were mekadesh it for the avodah zarah. The Baal Yom Tosafot say that they don't think that's the case. There's no such thing as kodshim by avodah zarah. It's not enough that he simply says, oh, I'm designating this for the avodah zarah. He has to take a maisa. He has to take an action that designates it. And he says you have to give it over to the komrim, you have to give it over to the priest, and then it has to be fed out of the monies of the karshine avodah zarah. That makes it into something that's mukdash, the avodah zarah. So you need more than simply a stipulation. You need a maisa. And nevad is an animal that was worshipped. So now you have a problem. You have a braita here that says we have no suspicions with regards to the goy engaging with these animals. On the other hand, we have a mishnah that tells you we do worry about the goy being alone with these animals. Now, the Gemara earlier on already raised this issue back on Yudalit Amud Bet with regards to the mishnah at the bottom of Yudalit Amud Bet, which says that the makom shenagulim kor beim adaka mochrim, makom sheinu agim ain mochrim. Mishnah over there is a problem because it says that we do sell light animals to them. If you have a problem like in our Mishnah, which is that they were choshud al rivia, how can you say that you're allowed to sell them the behemot tokot anywhere? Why is it at mutar? It should be in Isur the Gamre. Rav over there solved the problem by saying the two are correlated. The makom that they give them a right to sell it to is a place where they're miyachet, where they're alone. The Baal Yom Tosafot over here say, why doesn't the Gemara bring Rav's answer over here? Because that could have solved the same problem. Which is to say, it's a makom shenagu, makom shalom agu, and that would solve your problem. Makom shenagu is the problem in the Mishnah. Makom shalom agu is the issue of the Braita. And that would have solved the problem. There's a huge Tosafot over here. The Tosafot in the end say that Rav was Chozerbo, first of all, from that position, in the Gemara over there. Baf Rav Hadarbe, the Gemara says that Rav backed away from that position because of another statement that we found from Rav, which seems to indicate that he agrees with the position that we're going to find in our Gemara over here, which is the solution to the problem. So that's the number one reason the Gemara doesn't bring Rav as a solution. And in addition, he says, "V'yesh lamar demakom shenagu shalom kor minhagahu deika ha isura leka." He says that the places that they had a minhag not to sell, that was all that it was a minhag and not an isur. Elinu korban afila minhaga leka. By a korban, there is no minhag. Shemayu noagim limaneam likach mehem veimot the korban. If Jews did not buy korbanot from non-Jews, Ein ledavar sof, he would have no end to this matter. You would have a problem that behemot would get mixed up in trading between different parties or different cities or different places. And then you have a problem, and it's a kavua, and then it'll be mechsel, you won't be able to buy an animal from anyone. That's number one. Number two is, behemot anoludim bebitoshel ein di likach korban. There are not a sufficient number of animals within the Jewish community to bring all the korbanot they need because the smallest mumim make the korban pasul for the mizbeach. And if you only bought from Jews, you would not have enough korbanot. And at need, you would have to buy from the non-Jews. So what the Baal Yitosefot in the end say is that the braita here, when it says lochim, has to be saying lokeach, both from a place of nagu and a place of lo nagu. In essence, it makes the whole statement of Rav moot over here, because Rav's solution won't solve the problem. Because the statement of the bright day is you buy from them no matter what. Whether it's makom shnagu, makom shalom nagu, and Tosafot says it has to be that way, because otherwise you would not have a sufficient number of behemot, as well as the fact that you'd have tarovet between the different places, and you would never be able to buy from anybody. So he says that's why we can't use Rav's position. So for two reasons, the Gemara doesn't use Rav's answer. One is that Rav himself was chozer bo and rejected it. Baal Tosafot think it's this breika that made Rav change his mind. And number two is, even if you want to say that Rav is okay, you can't apply it over here because the buying or purchasing of behemot from an Oved Kochavim for a korban is an absolute necessity. We couldn't do it without it. And therefore, you can't have a restriction. So when it says, Bishlamo Muksa V'nevad, when it comes to Muksa V'nevad, Im Ito De Aksye, Im Ito De Pauche, Lo Abim Mizabin Le, if he actually was consecrated it to the Avodah Zarah, or he actually worshipped it, he wouldn't be selling it. So the fact that he's selling it is an indication that he didn't do either one of those. I think you could read that in one of two ways. You can either read that if he consecrated or he worshipped it, of course he's not going to sell his God. Of course he's not going to sell something that he consecrated to the Avodah Zarah. I think the other way you could read it is, even if he did consecrate it or he did worship it, the fact that he's selling it shows that he's being mevatel, whatever that he's done. And we know later on, we'll see in the Gemara, that a goy can't be mevatel the action that he takes. And therefore, there will be an automatic assumption of bitul in the Avodah Zarah. He's selling it, obviously he doesn't believe it's a God anymore. So I think you can read it in either one of those ways. Ela roveya v'nirba lachush. Why are we worried about roveya and nirba with regards to the korbanot over here? Sam rab tachlifa marab shila bar avina mishmei derav oved kochavim chas al behemto shaloti aker. This is what we brought back on Ted Vovom and Aleph, where we say af rab hadar bay. This is the answer that he gave, which is that there's a difference between an animal owned by a goy and someone else's animal. Because it's someone else's animal, he has no vested interest or monetary interest in the animal. Therefore, he's willing to sleep with the animal because whatever goes wrong with the animal is not his problem. It's his own behemah. He's worried about it because the Gemara believes over here that if there is bestiality performed, the animal or the female would no longer allow a male to mount. And therefore, the animal would no longer be good for production. So now he will ruin the value of his animal, both for himself, as well as the fact that if he wants to sell it, he won't be able to sell it. So he avoids acting in this way because of the monetary interest he has in the animal. It says, Atinach nikevot. That works well for female animals. Zicharim mayika de meimar. What are you going to do about male animals? In regards to a male animal, you can't say it's ne'akar. So now, why don't we choshesh for the fact that the zicharim would be problematic if you bought it from them, if you bought male animals from them. Now Rashi points out here, and you can't say that the Torah was only worried about a case of roveya, but not a case of roveya zachar, because the psukim that teaches these dinim are found by a korban olah. It says there, min ha-behema, min ha-bakar, min ha-tzon, and the Gemara there uses those as miutin, to teach us that these are restricted. That restriction comes from a Korban Olah, and a Korban Olah only comes from a Zachar. So you can't be just speaking about a female animal, you have to speak about a Zachar as well. So Michael, the Meimar of Kano, ho machishan bibasar, because sleeping with the male animal causes it to be weakened or to lose its heft. So there is a monetary loss as well. So the goy will not get engaged with a female or a male animal because of the fact that it will ruin the animal monetarily, and that he won't do. How can you buy an animal from their shepherds? Why aren't we worried about the fact that he slept with it? The Ro'eh over there is worried he will lose his salary if it's found out that he's been sleeping with the animals. So again there, the Ro'eh doesn't own the animals. He's watching the animals for someone else. And if he's watching for someone else, we said before, he doesn't have a monetary interest in it, he will sleep with the animals. Where it says that the Ro'eh has his salary at risk, and that means that he won't do that because he has a risk now of losing all the benefits. El Hadatanya, then what do you do with this? In Muslim Bema the Roeshalan. You're not allowed to give your animal over to one of their shepherds. So here it says you're allowed to buy a non-Jew's animal that's been out with the shepherd, but you're not allowed to hand your own animal over to the shepherd. Well, the second statement seems to indicate the reason you can't hand it over to the shepherd is because he doesn't care about your Behema, and he'll sleep with your Behema, and that's the problem. So why don't you say the same thing by the Roeh? The shepherd is watching the non-Jewish animal, that he'll sleep the animal, it's not his animal. And if you say the reason he's too scared is that he will lose his salary, and therefore he's not worth taking that risk, why don't you say the same thing when the Jew gives him a behema? He's not worth taking that risk because he'll lose his salary. Inu, takes one to know one. The non-Jew who knows his fellow non-Jew and what he likes to do and what he does, he's too scared that the other non-Jew will figure out what he's doing and he'll lose his salary. The Jews who are a little more naive, they won't figure out what he's doing. Or maybe in a sense that the communities are separate. The non-Jewish community where they all live together, the other individual, the non-Jew is going to figure out what his role is doing. The Jew is bringing his animal across lines in a sense to the other community, won't have as much insight as to what's happening with this Roeh. People aren't going to speak to him, tell on him, give them information that he otherwise would have gotten. So because of that, by the behema of a goy that was with the Roeh, it's okay. If it's the behema of a Jew being given over to a non-Jewish Roeh, you have a problem, you have a serious issue. Amarabba, Hainu Damre Inche, this is what people say. This is the common folk saying. Michtava Glalala Baza. So the way Rashi reads it over here, Machtev, a stylus, you can see over there he calls it a graphic or a grapha. Glala is marble. Baza, it cuts into the marble. When you take the metal stylus, that's how you write on the marble. Everybody knows that the metal stylus or metal that's placed on the marble will cut into the marble or engrave in the marble. So too, rigla bechavre yodo. The Rashi over here says, rigla comes from the world, lote lech rachil be'amecha. That regla means a rachil. The Rachil who spreads news, rumors, traffics in, information, lashon hara. So rigla bechavre yodo. Someone who is a rumor trader or a speaker of lashon hara knows who the other people are that speak lashon hara. So either he knows to avoid them because he knows that they're going to also speak about him, so he avoids them. Or it might be that he knows who to get together with because he knows they have information. Interesting, the mashal and nimshal aren't as close together. It's just a statement that just like you know for certain that the stylist will carve marble, so too someone engaged in this practice will know someone else has engaged it. It takes one to know one. That's what Rashi says. The Rabbeinu Chanan over here says that the word rigla is a tax collector. Perish rigla, adam umune ala meches, someone who is appointed to collect taxes. Umechazer ala nichnasim v'yotzim. And he goes after the people are going in and out. Margish begon v'yameches. And he has a good sense of who doesn't pay taxes or who is tax evading. He has a good insight as to who's evading taxes. Again, someone's involved in the business has a good smell for people that are acting inappropriately. And the way that the Bali Tosafot bring in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam is that based on the Oruch's Girsa, which was not Rigla, but rather Digla, which is Shakran, someone who is a liar. And that is one liar knows another liar. And again, it's the same concept that it takes one to know one. And similarly, that's what's being said here in the Gemara, that the goy knows his fellow guy with regards to bestiality, he has a better insight into the matter, whereas the Jew is too far removed or too naive to get that information or to know what he's engaged in. Ela'a, the Tani Rav Yosef. Then what are you going to do with this? Braita Rav Yosef. Armalata, lo tarvi kalba. A widow may not bring up a dog in her house. Velo tishrei bar beirav shpiza. And she may not host a young Talmud Chacham in her house. She may not provide dorming for the boys that are coming to learn in the yeshiva because of the problem of chashad. This is a woman who's a widow, someone who doesn't have a partner, a husband to be with her. So the fear here is that she'll use some alternative, which either is a kelev or the young Talmud Chacham. And even though in general, we'll see this later on in the Masechta, we do not worry about Jews engaging in this behavior. Nevertheless, here where you have a widow and a dog together, there's ample room for people to start making up rumors or saying things about it. And therefore, we say don't get involved in these situations, mipnei chashad, so people don't think the wrong thing, even though they shouldn't be thinking the wrong thing. And there shouldn't be any temptation in these cases. So even though, again, generally we don't worry about it, this case we would worry about it because of the chashad of this woman who's living alone. Bishlama bar beirav tzniyolo. When it comes to the young Talmud Chacham, if he actually gets involved in this behavior, he's not going to go around boasting about that. He's going to keep it quiet. There we would worry about her engaging with him because she could keep that under cover. Ela kalba came into migraba miratito. Wait a minute. After she sleeps with the kelev, the dog will come attached to her. She'll be afraid because when she walks out, the dog is going to be wrapped around her all over all the time. And people will suspect that there's something wrong. We just said here, if people can figure out what happened, then the person's not going to engage in that behavior. Over here, they're going to figure out that the dog's so close to her because she had some sort of relationship with the dog. It says, there's another way to get a dog excited about you, is you throw him a piece of meat. You give him a food that he really likes. Then he will also stick to you forever and never get away from you. Therefore, she can tell people, or people will think that the reason the dog's following me is because I feed it food, not because I'm sleeping with it. And that won't give away her secret. And that's why we're worried about both the bar beirav and the dog living alone with the widow because of the possibilities or the untoward behavior that could come that could be covered up and then nobody would know about it. As opposed to the case by the Ovid Kochavim where it would come out or he'd be exposed and he would risk losing his zechar. Nikevot, itzok nikevot, my time alo miyachad dinan. Why do we not leave it alone? The Gemara here is really referencing back to a braita earlier in the first parak where we said that the restriction against yichud is both for zecharim with nikevot, zecharim with zecharim, and then nikevot with zecharim, and then nikevot with nikevot. So the question is, why is nikevot with nikevot a problem? Zachar with Nekeva, we understand what the problem is. Even Zachar with Zachar, we know what the problem is. And with a Zachar, Behema, with a woman, we also know what the problem is. The question we have is, Nekeva, Nekeva, why should there be a problem? Nothing could go on between a Nekeva and a Nekeva that would be problematic in terms of bestiality. This is something akin to what's said in the Mishnah, that Arayot are prevalent and pervasive amongst their community, and therefore a man will go over to his friend's wife without any questions. And when he's going over there to engage his friend's wife, she's not around. And he uses the alternative, which is the female animal that's there. So the risk of the female animal with a female is not because of the two females, it's because of the visitor to the woman or the owner that will end up having his behemah be exposed. There are some that say, even if he finds the other man's wife there, he would still sleep with the animal. The Jewish animal is more appealing to them than even their wives. The Baal Tosafot make a comment over here that says, says there's no idea where the Gemara got this from, or where this principle was established from. It gives no precedent for it. And Amar Mar indicates that it comes from another place, or they're quoting another source, and we have no other place in Shas that would give us the source for this statement over here. It's a statement that doesn't show any evidence, just states it as like an empirical fact, that this is the case. And so, obviously, the Baalei Tosafot are either somewhat suspect of the statement, or they're worried about the issues that will create with their neighbors if they know that this is the way that the Gemara speaks about them. Tamar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, "B'shah sheba nachash al chava, itil ba zuhuma." The time that the Nachash slept with Chava, he gave some sort of tum'ah to Chava. Yochi Yisrael Nami. Well, Adam and Chava are the progenitors of all humankind. Doesn't matter whether you're Jewish or not Jewish. If there was zuhuma from that point in time, then everybody has that zuhuma in it. Implicit in the Gemara is that zuhuma from the Nachash is what draws the goy into bestiality, or makes it that it's more appealing, or appealing at all to him. So then where it says, Yisrael shamar al Har Sinai paska zuhumatan. The Jews that stayed at Har Sinai, that removed all mumim from them and anything that was problematic, including this tum'ah or this zuhumah that was given by the Nachash. Over the Kukhumim shlomdo Har Sinai lo paska zuhumatan. Over the Kukhumim that did not stand at Har Sinai, we never had that zuhumah taken away from them. And as the Baalei Tosafot point out, and it's actually in the Girsa of the Gemara in Shabbat, with regards to Geirim, even though they did not stand at Har Sinai, Mazlayu, their mazel was at Har Sinai, and therefore even Geirim have that status that the Zuhuma was taken away. The original statement of the Gemara is very questionable or problematic, because we have no source of backup from that, and the Gemara is bringing it as a very strange Agadata, which is the fact that the Nachash HaKadmon slept with Chava, which has ringings of Christian theology, of a original sin, and this problem that involves there's some sort of zuhuma that came from the origins over there that was taken away at Har Sinai. Again, we discussed this more extensively in the Gemara and Shabbat, which has a little more to this Gemara. The Marsha brings from Rashi in Shabbat and other places that there are ramazim in the psukim, the fact that the word ishiani is used, it's like lashon nisu'in. And therefore, there's a remez in the pasuk that there was some sort of connection between Chava and the Nachash. Rashi over here quotes the Agadato, the Midrash, that all their mumim were cured at Har Sinai. But those were external, physical mumim. Rashi is suggesting that that also applied to the Zuhuma. But we know that after they worshipped the eagle, it came back. So that would also create a problem over here in terms of the question of the Zuhuma and the correlation with Har Sinai. So it definitely is somewhat cryptic, difficult statement to understand. But there are those that understand it in a Derech Remez, like the Maharal, who says, the fact that Chava acquiesced to the suggestion or the advice of the Nachash brought some sort of partnership between them, and it is the equivalent of Biyah, not literally Biyah, but an idea by Yudu Basar Echad, that now they become one entity, as opposed to before where the Zuhuma or the Nachash was external. This made it internal because now they became partners after this sin, and that infused Chava with a certain amount of lust or Yetzirah for Behemoth, given that partnership that they now had created. For Bnei Yisrael, that was wiped out at Har Sinai, whereas for the Goyim, that persisted afterwards. The Meshech Chokhmah that's found in the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach, he writes there, "Ketchilat ha-briyah haya ki yateh atzmo letzad ha-tov, tamid, rak ha-yetzirah hu mesit bifnei atzmo. Amnam, kasher ba nachash al-chava, behiti o ba-zuma, shenit arbevu ha-tov ve-ara bo be-atzmo, kamo de targum onkulus minei de meida tov u-bish," in which now the Yetzirah became part and parcel of the individual, "ad shegimel avod biriru v'zikuku ki mi Abraham yatsa Yishmael mitzak esav at shebe Yaakov v'ya mitato shleima k'damru rabbeteinu zal b'shabbat v'etzem anefesh ha-israeli notel ato rak se'or shebisa v'shibur malfiot me'akev v'chein mehan yakfia v'mitzvot v'ara hu inyan v'fnei atzmo," like the Rambam explained with regards to whipping someone until they say rotzeh ani, that inherently people are good, and it's only the klipa of bad that is causing them problems. Ra is more external to them, as opposed to motolam, shenafsham iftara. The motolam where ra, or the yetzirah, is integral to their nefesh and their existence. In that way, it makes a distinction between Bnei Yisrael and the motolam, based on this, a gadata of the zuhuma of the Nachash. And that is what it's meant by the biyah. And then later on, when they stood at Har Sinai, it would have cleanse them of that, or remove the strength of the Yetzirah. likely because they saw Hashem Panim El Panim, and then you would have to believe that when the Chetah Ego came about, that was not reversed, even though much of what Chazal speak about the benefits of Mamar Sinai reversed by the Ego, this aspect either remained intact, or it was only diluted by the Ego, but still there's a differential between Israel and a Goy with regards to this issue of the Ra being inherent to them versus the Ra being something that is external and not inherently a part of them. As difficult as it is, the Gemara now has a conclusion as to why the behemoth are at risk, no matter what gender the behemoth is, and no matter what gender the owner is. Ibailu ofotmai. What's the status with regards to birds? Because there you would think that it wouldn't be an issue in terms of bestiality. Tashma, damar yudam ashmo, mishum rabbi chanina. Ani reite ovri kuchavim shlakach avaz min ashuk. He bought a goose in the shuk, and rav'a, he slept with it. Chanka, he choked it. Salah, he roasted it, vaklan, and then he ate it. So here is some very deprecative type of behavior. Vamar Rabiria midifti aniriti aravichad. So kach yerech min ashuk. He bought a thigh from the shuk, a thigh of meat. Vchakba kedei rivia. He carved out into the thigh something that would allow him to sleep with it. Rava, he slept with it. Salah, he roasted it, vaklan. Again, the depravity of the behavior here is what's being indicated by the Gemara. The Gemara is making no differentiation between animals and ofot. And even here, they're speaking about a story that not even dealing with live animals, to talk to you about how morally bankrupt these individuals are. And so therefore, the answer of the Gemara seems to be that ofot would be problematic as well. And obviously, this conclusion is only about birds that are big enough where the issue is a real issue, and therefore we don't have any application by korbanot, because the only birds that are brought to korbanot are Torim and Bnei Yonah, who are too small for any of this to matter. Tomorrow, we will deal with other solutions to the problem, including Ravina and Rabbi Padat. The Balei Tosafot on the Mishnah have a serious question that they raise in many of the issues that come up in Avodah Zarah, which is, how do we leave our animals together with the non-Jews alone? What happened to this restriction that is in the Mishnah? What's the problem? Why do we have any head there to leave our animals together with the non-Jews? And we even give over our animals to their shepherds. That the way that we're going to have solutions tomorrow by other Amoraim is to say that the Braita that we brought about Korban in our Mishnah argue. And the Braita is the position of the Rabbanan. And our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer. It's a Dat Yachid. And therefore we paskin like the Braita against this Mishnah to say that we are not Choshesh for Riviyah. Even though this is a Stam Mishnah, and in general you would ask Shalokha Kistam Mishnah, nevertheless he points out that there's a Machloket in a different Masechta, and there we have no order in the Masechtot, and therefore we don't know if it's a Stam Machloket, Machloket Achachach Stam, and therefore we can't determine whether the Halacha should be like this Mishnah based on a Stam Mishnah, and that's why we would favor the position of the Rabbanan. That's interesting. The answer of the Balei Tosafot is that we paskin like the other Amoraim. Even though later on we're going to bring a solution for Rabbi Avina and Rabbi Padat, and Ravina is younger than Rabbi Padat, nevertheless the Gemara brings Ravina's Pshita before that of Rabbi Padat. And so what the Balei Tosafot say is, had the Gemara wanted to paskin like Ravina, it would have kept it in their chronological order. And it would have brought Rabbi Padat first, and then Ravina. The fact that the Gemara flipped it and brought Ravina first, and then Rabbi Padat afterwards, shows you the Gemara wants to paskin like Rabbi Padat, and that's the solution of Rabbi Padat, and that's why we're allowed to leave our behemoth with the non-Jews. Then he brings a second answer, which is, V'od, B'shol Shofrim, Kabinin, Daleich, Achara Mekil. Number two reason to paskin like the Mekil over here is that this is a Din D'Rabbanan. When you deal with a Din D'Rabbanan, then we go after the Mekil. The Stam Mishnah is not Koveya. The order of the Gemara favors paskin like Rabbi Padat. And the third thing is that we're dealing with a Din D'Rabbanan. They go after the Mekil when you have a Machloket. For all those reasons, we're going to be Mekil over here. Even though the problem of Eima Midim seems to be a problem of Lifnei Iver Lo Tidem Yechshol, which is a problem of the Oraita. So why is he saying it's the Rabbanan? What you have to say here again is, it wasn't an absolute certainty. It was a chashad that you might come to Lifnei Iver, and that's already a Din D'Rabbanan. The easier way to deal with the solution, and that's why the Meiri speaks about Lo Tichanim, and that's why other Rishonim deal with it over here, which is to say, that the Gemara has a clear assumption here that this is the practice of the Avodei Kochavim at that time. If you live amongst people who are morally upright and the government will even punish for that type of behavior or bestiality, then there's no question that none of this applies because these individuals don't engage in that behavior. You don't have the assumption, the underlying anachot that the Gemara places. It's just not true. And therefore, they say the reason we allow our behemoth to be with them is because these goyim don't act like the Avodei Kochavim that are being mentioned here in the Gemara. Okay, we'll end here at the bottom of Chavet Amud Bet.